Session number 21660, Reel 6.
Jack, Reel 6.
I think it must have had some effect on them, because they were only in slip trenches or bunkers the other side of the tennis courts. But when they built a bunker, they built a bunker. And whether they had the chance of building anything special in the time there, I don't know, because I never went down to the D6 bungalow afterwards. Basically, that's what happened to me on Kohima.
The positions that you were in, you mentioned you had a dugout.
Mm.
Did you construct that yourself?
No, that was already there. There had been some action on that, on those features prior to us going in. They also they must have been getting prepared for an attack, because an attack was imminent. They knew it was coming, and so therefore they had some troops there, but not a lot, who must have done something about it.
And how were you relieved?
We were relieved by the 2nd Division. And the relief came on, as far as, it was on the, a lot of dates, but as far as I'm concerned, it was on the 18th of April. And it was on my 2nd wedding anniversary. So that was something to remember it by.
And how did you hear of the relieving force was on its way?
We knew that we were told they were on their way. And that was the 2nd Division. I'll tell you another tale about that in a minute. And eventually they got us out. And they moved in, took over our positions. And we just went out. You can imagine what we looked like. No shave for 16 days, no wash for 16 days. And quite something.
How was morale?
Not bad. That's what I say about the battalion itself. They're a wonderful lot of guys, and they knew it was either they'd got to be there, they were there fighting for their own life, and a lot of us got away with it, and that's what they were like. They helped one another, from the officers down to the private soldier. They all had their turn. In fact, I think it was the colonel, one of the higher ups, said it was not an officer's battle; it was a private's battle. They were doing all the work. They were taking on all the attacks, and that's where Lance Corporal Harmon, of course, got the VC.
And was there a feeling as you left Kohima that you'd done something that was going to become very significant?
No, we didn't even think about that, not at all. And it wasn't until some time afterwards that the, I don't know whether it was Warren, Brigadier Warren, or somebody said that. No, it's Mountbatten also said that that if we hadn't have held, they were in the attack in India.
So what happened when you left Kohima? Where did you go to?
Went back to Dimapur.
And what was your reception in Dimapur? What did you?
Marvellous. There was some food waiting for us, because some of the echelon were left behind in Dimapur. And they had prepared things for us, you know, when we got back. And washing units were there, and bathing units, and all sorts of things were there. And you could have a shave and get yourself tidied up. New uniforms were there. Everything's prepared for us when we got back, which was good.
And what had the casualties been like?
We lost about 200 men, I think it was, something like that.
Was that kill wounded, and
kill wounded.
What had happened to the wounded during the siege?
Well, a lot were killed. Well, they were laying there, and There was no real cover for wounded at all. No, none at all.
Did any come back down with you?
No, they got them out first, I think. Yeah.
So how long were you in Dimapur when you arrived back in Dimapur?
Not long, fortnight, I think, around about a fortnight. And then we went up the sort of the Jessamy track.
Did you do you receive any replacements for the casualties that you'd received?
I think we got some through eventually. I really don't know how long it took. But
so you must have been quite under strength at that
point.
We were
under strength, yeah.
How many men were you dealing with, really, for your B company supply?
Full strength company, just over 100.
And was that much less at that period, had you?
I was with Headquarter Company then, and they casualties in Headquarter Company weren't that great.
Was that due to the position that you'd actually
That's
been
right,
at Kahima?
Yeah.
So you said you were there 2 weeks and you moved to the Jessamy track?
Yeah.
How did you move up there?
By mule trains, and that's where we really started to use mules. But did you ever see that statue of Lance Corporal Harmon that was produced? Have you seen one? You did. So I've got one up there.
So as you moved up there with the mules, what positions did you take up when you got onto the track?
We didn't. We were mainly pushing ground, and it was a sort of an infiltrating movement, following the Japs up, pushing them out. And then they get back on the road again. And there you'll find there'll be a bath unit again with. The baths were 50-gallon barrels cut in half and bits of wood put over the jagged edges. So you used to walk out with the old uniform on, straight into a bath, and then straight into a clean one, a new one. So that was well organised.
Can I ask you about uniforms? Mm-hmm. What you were wearing when you were in India and Burma?
Battle dress.
Did you have a bush hat?
Yes, we had bush hats there, yeah. We had to, really. We started off with topis when we got into India. But they were all blown away once in a hurricane that we had. even our company office tent was blown away.
So were you in Jungle Green?
Yes, yes.
And was that different from the battle dress that you'd worn in Europe and?
Yeah, because they were mainly uniform, you know, the khaki uniform.
And with your job, how did your job differ as you'd gone into the jungle?
Well, it's still a question of supply, and we had so many mules per company, and we went up in columns. The troops may have gone on before us, but then we would follow up to supply. Or we'd go up together. But mainly, the troops would go forward, clear the way, then we would follow up afterwards. But of course, we did have troubles with mules falling over the ridge, and they were the question of whether you could get them back or not. But we used to go down, climb down, and get them back up if we possibly could. But one stage there, we were getting the, after we, on the Jessamy track, and after that, we were now and again getting supplies of eggs. And of course, they could only be carried on the mules, they couldn't carry them any other way. But which mule used to make a bolt? Those were eggs, because it was too light for them. They like weight, and they wanted, if their weight was equal, there was no bother. But if the weight wasn't, then you had troubles. It could be anything from, you know, being the weight take them over the edge or whatever, or they, if they weren't if the weightage wasn't satisfactory, then they'd bolt. Then you would catch them.
Did you have a method for getting them back onto the track when they'd gone over the edge?
No, it was a question of We had nothing mechanical to operate them with or to get them back up. You had to pull them up, help them up.
What happens if you couldn't get them up?
They'd stop there.
Would you shoot them or...?
Well, I never did. I've never heard anyone shooting anyone, but there may have been a follow-up, I don't know.
Would that have occurred maybe if they'd been injured?
Yeah, well, if they'd been injured, it would have been a question of getting rid of them.
And are they stubborn?
Well, they can be. Yeah. Now, at one stage... Now, where were we? We had Indian mules. Where was it? I think it was after we'd come off onto the road, the other side of Infal. And I had to go up with the string of mules, and where we parked the mules, as it were, was in a sort of an orange grove. And we went through this orange grove, and then it came onto a very narrow path, sheer one side and sheer this one. And part way through that was a little clearing that gave a bit of space. And I stood there, and I checked the loads as they came through to see if they were all right. One trio of mules, the... third one must have been thinking something, because as I stood there and he got past, he measured his length and he let go, and he kicked me chest, chin, knocked me out, and if I'd have come round, I'd have shot him, I tell you that. And at the same time, that's the first time I rode a horse up to this spot. And it was a new area we was going into. And first time I rode a horse, and I got somebody down to look after it whilst I went forward. Well, of course, the thing that I was worried about, that they'd signalled back and said I'd fallen off the horse. But it wasn't that. And I got back all right. But then the Jemadar, who's the officer in charge of these mules, I got hold of him and said, I don't want to see that mule again. And I didn't see it again.
So mules would have this character to them.
Oh yeah, they had some character, some of them were. Yeah. There was a nasty old bang. Of course, well, split my chin. I'm lucky I didn't, a bit higher, you know, than my head or something.
And that was just on a whim he did that?
Yeah. Mm.
You mentioned that you would have fresh eggs at that stage.
Yeah.
Was there any changes from the rations, say, that you'd had in the desert and in the UK that you were issuing?
I can't remember fresh eggs in the desert. I can't answer that one, can I?
What about fresh vegetables or greenery? Would you get any of that?
Didn't get a lot of that. It's nearly all... a lot of tinned stuff. But in the main it was a little bully beef. But that was good.
Is there an effect on the bully beef of heat? Is it different?
Oh, yeah, it could be... In real heat, it could melt, and if you opened it up, it would just run out. How I used to do with that was, if on any of our routes that we had to take, I found a stream, and we would sort of got a few minutes to spare, I used to put all the bully beef in the stream, cool it down.
And were you supplied with the rice?
Rice. Not in action anyway. I don't know. I don't think we did in action. I think we had Rice out of action. I really can't remember Rice in action. It's very difficult to have cooked.
And water? How was water supplied?
Water, if it was out in the jungle, it was supplied by air. Or if we found a suitable stream, we'd fill up then. And often there was a stream available. We get water.
Did you have to take any precautions with water that you'd taken from
streams? Yes, we had some sort of capsules to put in. It used to taste awful, but made the water drinkable.
And what about precautions against malaria?
We used to have what we call malaria parades. Mepocrine was taken, and obviously in action you couldn't line them up. See, they took their mepocrine, but other than that, that's what they used to take, mepocrine.
Would you oversee that?
That's what we used to do. If it was out of action, or in a place that we were available to give them mepocrine, then we used to be there to see if they took it.
Would most people take the
mepocrine? Yes, they would. Yeah.
They would see the point to doing that, wouldn't
they? That's right. Mm.
Did you have any cases of malaria during active service?
I didn't, no. As I said, I used to have this tot of whiskey and tot of it, of gin, every night, if it was possible. And I got malaria when I came home. And it was, we were living in Sevenoaks then, and wife called the doctor in, and when he got to me, he pulled back the bedclothes, and it was like a kettle boiling. And he said, hospital. So Marion said, no way. She said, you tell me what I've got to do, and I'll do it. And she looked after me for a fortnight. And he was hot one time and stone cold a few minutes afterwards.
Would you shiver?
Would you shiver?
So with that, was that the only medical kind of problems you came across? You mentioned earlier on about jungle sores. Was there anything else?
I had dengue fever, what they call dengue fever. And I had a temperature of 103.
So how did you deal with this when you got dengue fever and you had that high fever? What would you do?
Well, I was in the RAP, the regimental aid post. They kept me in there until the temperature went down.
What were
several days.
What were the facilities like in there?
Well, it was just nice stretchers to lay on and nothing else. I mean, if you were in RAP, in some place, like in the camp area, you had folding beds and that sort of thing. But I think where I was at that particular stage, there was just an ordinary stretcher you laid on, just to get me over it.
So you were on the Jessamy track after Kahima, and you were doing these infiltrations. You moved down towards Imphal?
We bypassed Imphal. We came out on the road the other side of Imphal. I can't remember seeing Imphal or going through Imphal at all. We came out the other side, and we did. Two things happened there. We came across a Japanese hospital, I think it must have been, and it was awful. We had to burn the whole place down, and there was even Japs had died crawling out of bed. You know, it was really terrible. And we hadn't met them, we had nothing to do with that, but we just had to get rid of it. And then on the same track, we came across an area, and we took over our positions. I think we'd push them back. They weren't anywhere near us, the Japanese. But we moved in and got ourselves settled in. And then we noticed, really, there was a couple of these big mounds. Two or three of those, They were flying ants. And they erupted. You never heard of flying ants moving an army, have you? Well, they did. We had to move out. The area was absolutely, it was like a cloud of ants. Very, very thick. And if you let them settle on you for long, you're in trouble. So we moved out until your action had finished, then we knocked it all down and back in again.
Were the ants, would they bite?
Well, yes, they're quite big, they're flying ants. And so we never stopped to see if they'd bite.
So what happened next?
Then we moved on to, I think, a place called Paegu. I think there might be something there about this.
So you were just telling me off the record that it wasn't Paegu, it was war. So what was happening at this stage? Were you just moving into Burma?
We were just pushing them back. We came across, one instance we got back on the road, and some villagers, we stopped in a village, and the villager came over to me and he said, pointed, he said, Japaniwala. And so I think four blokes, and I got a Bren gun, and they told us where it was, and we crept through, and we saw the basher, what they were talking about, basher in a house. And we got down and laid down and watched what was happening. And all of a sudden, in this, it was an open-fronted sort of building. And it looked like something like straw or something inside. And then all of a sudden we saw a head pop up. And then another one. So we then let them have it. We killed them, three of them, with the Bren gun. But they were... That was at a time when I think the Japs were trying to get out, and they must have got lost from their troops, and then we came through the village, and they hid, but we were told about them and got rid of them. And nothing much happened after that. If I remember, then we got into Rangoon, and we were billeted, or at least headquarter company were billeted in Government House, part of Government House, and the handing over of officers in command of the Japs when they capitulated, that was all done in Government House at Rangoon, and two. Captain Koth, I think his name was, and another one were two captains on guard of these Japanese officers. There was one happening there. Then General Stopford, he viewed the battalion by company, and he reviewed our headquarter company, and in the end, the order to disperse, but the company sergeant, Major and Colour Sergeant, stand fast. And he came along and spoke to us. He said, well, how'd things get on when you were coming down the road? I said, well, rations weren't bad, but clothing was at its worst. And we had a lot of job to get uniforms. You know, sometimes too big, sometimes too small, and so on. And he said, yeah, he said, I understand that. He said, but you were better off than the Gurkhas. I said, well, why is that? He said, we gave them one between two. So we had some funny times as well as bad times.
What did you think of General Stopford?
I thought he was a nice chap. The way he spoke to me, dealt with me, was very nice. And then another episode I had was when the government of Burma was handed over to the Burmese by Lord, what's his name?
Mountbatten.
No, Mountbatten. And I was the senior NCO on parade for the army. And he spoke to me and he said, so I got the TA medal up. He said, when did you join the TA? I said, well, just before the war. He said, good man. He said, you must have seen it coming on.
So had the war ended by that stage?
By that time.
How had you felt about the ending of the war?
Very happy. I really had enough. I mean, it was 3 years of hell, really. Didn't really stop when we were moving one place to another. And I hadn't been home for 3 years. And it was a great pleasure.
When you'd been fighting in Burma, what was your attitude towards the Japanese?
I didn't want to know. Friends over there, they had some Japanese friends. In fact, he used to work for Japanese people. And at one stage, the child of the Japanese was coming down to stay. And I told him, don't ever bring him over to me. I don't want to see him. That's the way I feel about Japanese. But it's got different sense. Different. I mean, I've got a car which I can't drive. I'm not allowed to drive now. And my daughter has that car. And that's a Daihatsu. It's a smashing car.
Because I was just wondering, because you did mention when you saw the Japanese heads just appear, would you have taken the attitude in those days that you would shoot first rather than attempt to take
prisoners? Well, we often said one or two things had happened that with the Japanese, I think, for instance, I forget, it was after Kohima. No, yes, it was after Kohima. They captured one of our blokes, and he was eventually found. I didn't find him. He was being used for bayonet practice. And after that, we said, right, that's it. We won't take any prisoners. We're shooting first. That's the way I feel about Japs.